guys, welcome back to another episode of the Angler's Happy Hour podcast. In today's episode, we talk about big bass on Lake Fork, we debate braided line versus fluorocarbon for flipping, we roast a listener and a buddy for wearing a V-neck shirt, and we talk about what's ahead for the podcast this spring. Thanks again for tuning in, and we hope you guys enjoy. Thanks. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode. We are coming to you quarantine style. I'm sitting in the cave, Nick sitting in his house, and Rob sitting in the orange orchard at his house. Dude, have you been bit by a scorpion yet?
No scorpions, just hanging out, sitting in the Polaris Ranger. It's cloudy and about 70 degrees. I got shorts and a t-shirt on, comfortable, so not bad.
That's cool. Do you get scorpions there?
I have not. You know what, I'm at my in-laws' place, and years ago I had one crawl over my foot at their pool, but I haven't seen one since we've lived in the small house here, so.
Right on. That's cool. For listeners, they're super attracted to, like, citrus and orange groves, I guess. That's, like, a big thing, right?
They are, yeah. I mean, but what's funny about Arizona, I mean, or the valley, you'll have little sections that have scorpions, and you'll have sections that don't, so. I know they're here. It hasn't been a problem. So what's that?
Now you've jinxed it. So you probably have like every scorpion in the cul-de-sac.
Probably, but I'm not afraid of them like some people
are. Like me.
Like you. My buddy Les is deathly afraid of them.
Really? So. He's a pretty tough dude too. That's interesting.
Yeah. He'll walk around rattlesnakes and no big deal, but like we'll mountain bike and he's just freaked out about scorpions. Like there's no way for them to get him, but whatever. He's probably gonna kill me for saying that, but it is what it is.
he's probably not listening anyways, right?
Oh no, he is.
Sorry, Les.
Yeah.
What's up with you, Nick? What's the good word your way, man?
Oh man, you know, just living the dream. You kind of made the joke in the opening statement there about quarantine life, and I don't know if it's day three or day 3,426, but we're. Oh, Rob is flashing us a little something on FaceTime there, but no, man.
If he's flashing a drink to us, that's what he's flashing, nothing else.
Yeah, I'm drinking like, yeah, nothing else for sure. I'm drinking like my one beer for every 3 months. So.
Yeah, well, now you're on ration status, dude. There's nothing in the grocery store. I feel guilty drinking coffee. Every day when I have a coffee, I'm like, if this is the last time I've been able to buy coffee, it's going to get ugly in this house.
Yeah. Well, everybody got toilet paper. I bought coffee, so I'm good with coffee.
Dude, priorities. There are so many options when you run out of toilet paper, but fewer options when your caffeine or alcohol addiction kicks into full swing.
Dude, there's plenty of caffeine and alcohol. There's just not plenty of water.
Water's overrated.
Apparently so. That's Rob's resorted to beer.
Yep.
Well, I'm sure everyone is about sick and tired of the coronavirus and how it's affecting our life. You can't look, read, or do anything without that just being front and center. So we'll kind of keep that brief, and you know, hopefully everyone's finding their way around with it.
So crazy to the point there's stuff on Facebook about them closing the lakes, which I have a hard time believing that, but who knows?
Dude.
I'm praying they don't, dude. I mean, it sounds dumb. I mean, people have much bigger problems than whether they can go to the lake or not, but as a fisherman, it's like, well, at least we still got that. And if they gate those boat ramps, it's, you know, living in Arizona, it's not like there's parts of the country where there are so many little private boat ramps and so many lakes and bodies of water that you could find water. But if the state shuts down the boat ramps in Arizona, it's going to make it very difficult to go fishing.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, I saw an interesting thing today. I went on a mountain bike ride, and I have never seen so many people on the trail. And just people out hiking and walking, and the roads going to and from the National Forest were just packed with cars. Like, America's distressed, and what do? They go outdoors, which is pretty cool.
It's good. It's a great thing.
Yep. Yeah, and I just think people are thinking it's like their last little hurrah, which it's weird, but wow. I hope, you know.
Yeah.
No way. Well,
so there's some silver linings to be had, right? I mean, like, it's kind of forcing us all to either spend time with our families in our house or even things like that, right? Like all of a sudden you have a forced time to do things like that, where other, obviously as outdoor enthusiasts, we're creating that time regularly, but for the non-outdoor enthusiasts in the regular world, they're not. So I don't know. I guess you try and look for a silver lining in every situation, and that's one of them in this one.
Yeah. Well, and this situation also created something that was interesting this weekend. There was a local team tournament that was going on. My son is home from not playing baseball, right? They were supposed to play Oregon State this weekend, and my wife and I were going to go up and watch them. And anyhow, a good friend of mine, Reese Randall, called and said, hey, Clay is home from – he's at the Air Force Academy.
Okay.
He's a freshman up there, played football this year and is going to play baseball also. So he's a two-sport athlete at the academy, which is
impressive.
Talks about him, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess he's done playing football and he's going to focus on baseball. But anyhow, the kid's just a stud, right? And he wanted to fish a tournament. So Reese set him and Boyd up and they went and fished together this weekend. So that was kind of cool.
Did they have fun?
They had a blast. They didn't kill him. They caught a small limit. Nobody got killed, so it was a success, I think.
Who drove the boat? Boyd?
Boyd drove it. Yeah, and I got a funny story about that. Like, you know, I get it, man. I used to always get nervous in the mornings at tournaments, and my kids obviously almost exactly like me, right?
So of course.
They call their boat number, and I'm sitting up on the ramp watching.
Oh, you went, dude?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
I drove them up there and launched them. I'm like the, I don't know, I guess I was just afraid, right?
The shuttle.
I was, and I just wanted to see
That's
it happen.
Great, dude.
Make sure everything went down right. So I launch them, and anyhow, they call their boat number, and Boyd has not driven a boat. He hasn't fished a tournament. He's 20 years old. He hasn't fished a tournament in 10 years. He and I fished quite a few when he was like 8 to 10 years old, but hadn't fished one in forever and hasn't driven the boat in forever either. So kind of silly on my part to send him out there. But
nah, what could go wrong?
He's a smart guy, dude. He knows what's
he's
up.
Responsible. I mean, he's not. I just said safety is the utmost important thing, right?
You're bad, dude. Winning is at all costs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Vanderkoys are winners.
Yeah. So anyhow, to get back to the story, he takes off and I knew what direction he was going to go on the lake. And all of a sudden he's going the other way and he realized it. And I think what he just didn't, everyone was going the other way. And anyhow, he gets the boat turned around and then there's all these boat wakes. My boat, if you don't gas it pretty good, it porpoises really bad. So he's out there going, whoa, whoa, whoa.
He's free willy.
Free willy. Yeah, he tells me later, he looks at Clay and says, man, I look like a jackass, don't I? So,
that's
anyhow,
awesome.
They figured it out, and he, you know, got better at driving the boat as the day went, and they caught a bunch of fish and had a blast.
They caught a bunch, huh?
Yeah, fishing was pretty good up there. Guys caught a lot of numbers, just not a lot of weight. So
that's and to put that into like perspective, fishing wise, I mean, props to those guys, man. Props to Boyd and Clay because that water on that lake is coming up 1 foot per day. It's come up 20 feet in the last month.
Yep, it's 5 feet from being full, and it's the place is going to be awesome. So
it's cool. It's cool that there's a couple fish biting, and props to them for, you know, figuring out a way to make it happen.
Yeah, and it wouldn't have happened. They wouldn't have fished if this craziness hadn't happened, which obviously I'd rather them be in playing baseball, but it is what it is.
I was joking with one of our buddies, Rob. You know, you're probably sitting there thinking, oh, it's great that Boyd's fishing and stuff, but you're also thinking, like, he could literally be on the mound pitching for ASU against UCLA with scouts watching, and he's on the lake fishing. You know, it's so weird, dude.
It is weird, and, I mean, both those guys, I mean, they're just both great athletes, and to see what they're, I mean, whatever. It is what it is, and all the other baseball players are in the same situation.
Every single guy, no matter whether you're a baseball player or a fisherman or a car salesman or a realtor, every single person in the country is dealing with the same set of circumstances, and people are understanding about it, hopefully.
Yeah, you know that. Yeah, we just got to be thankful for the people working in the – excuse me. The people working in the hospitals and first responders, all those folks, you know, so they're the ones that are out there doing the crazy stuff.
Well, they're right.
How about the folks working in grocery stores and retail stores? I mean, they're just getting beat down by folks, right?
Dude, oh, I feel so bad for them.
I do too, and people are just rude to them. It's amazing.
So
like,
I,
you throw a little kindness their way, and it's amazing how they love that. You know what I mean? Just because they're just getting beat down.
Dude, so. 10-hour shifts of just getting beat down. You know,
there's
a lot of that to be had. I saw a funny one of the other funny things of this is that the internet has been on fire. I mean, the jokes and the memes about this have been spot on.
Nick's just writing. He's just a meme writer. That he'd be a great meme writer.
Dude, okay, maybe I can make 10 cents a year on that. But I saw one and it was good. It wasn't really a meme. It was one of those posts, right? So it's fairly long on Facebook. And it was like, I was at Walmart today. And it was taking the position of the people who are non-hoarders, right? Like you see that where it's like, I don't get why everyone's hoarding anything. I'm just doing regular shopping. So it reads like, I was at Walmart this morning and this guy came around the corner and he had like four things of toilet paper and like a dozen hand sanitizers and all this food stuff. And I just laid into it. I said, you know, you really are insensitive. How could you be taking all that stuff from the senior citizens who need it most and just giving him the fifth degree? And then he said, all of a sudden, the manager noticed what I was doing and saw I was making a scene. So the manager came over and said, sir, could you stop harassing my shelf stalker? It's the last one I've got.
That's awesome.
Probably about right, too, man.
Oh, I was at Walmart. And I, you know, again, I had a really kind older, you know, man out of retirement who was my checker. And he's like, dude, I work in sporting goods. I have no idea how to do the front end checking. And, you know, and I was totally patient. I was like, well, you know, we're going to get through this together. And the guy behind me, dude, he went off on him.
No kidding.
Expletives, calling him all sorts of names.
No. What's wrong with people?
Go find the manager.
Should have filmed that guy, dude. Posted it.
Yeah, I know. I should have fought him, but I'm only 38 pounds, so that wouldn't have
happened. Should have videotaped that.
Yeah. I was really intimidating. I was wearing my hashtag blessed, hashtag stressed, always looking my hashtag best shirt, so it's not very formidable.
Oh, my God. That's great, dude.
All right, let's talk fishing, man.
Okay.
Josh, you just rolled into town. What you got a little jet lag? You had a decent drive.
No jet lag, but I had quite a drive. I fished Lake Fork last week. We fished our stage three of the Major League Fishing Bass Pro Tour, and had a heck of a tournament, dude. Just overall, I mean, I did fair, but just overall, it was one of the best big fish tournaments that I've ever been a part of, if not the best. I mean, I saw the numbers today on the fish that were caught, and it was unbelievable. I think there were, and these numbers, don't quote me on these numbers, but there were roughly like 33 6-pounders, 20-something 7-pounders, 15 8-pounders, 9 9-pounders, and 2 10-pounders.
That's insane. Right? Wow.
That's
so insane.
The way the heavy hitters is going, I'm not going to go into it for listeners that that do know or don't know. They can check it out on the website. But the heavy hitters is a tournament based upon the biggest fish you catch in every event. It's a qualification tournament. I came into this tournament in 6th place in heavy hitters, and I caught a 7-1 as my biggest fish. And I dropped to 11th in heavy hitters with a 7-1. That put into perspective the size of the fish guys caught this week.
Yeah.
That's insane. And how long does that heavy hitters deal go?
It's supposed to be the first 5. So, of course, depending on what happens over the next couple events, whether we have them or not, who knows. But it's supposed to be the first 5. So I'm still in good shape. But just to catch it, to have a 7-pounder as your fish to count towards heavy hitters and have it actually drop you.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
You should have tried harder. Clearly it was on you.
Yeah. 100% dude. I was on my heels for sure, bro.
So were most of those fish on the spawn?
There was a major wave of spawn going on. And we talked about it when I was there and I talked to you guys on the last podcast, which had extremely quiet volume. So apologize for that. Hopefully this one will be louder. That we talked about spawn fishing a lot, and there was the first big wave of spawners on Lake Fork that week. So you had a couple options on what you wanted to do. You could fish some of the clearer water in the big spawny areas and bedfish, and that was a huge thing. Like, lots of the guys that did really well did that. I chose a little bit different path. I actually went to the dirty water where I knew the fish were spawning, but I wouldn't be able to sight fish. And most of the fish I caught were spawning fish that were on a bed that I didn't see. So like,
okay.
I keyed on areas that looked like spawning areas, like dead end canals, little, you know, warm protected pockets, stuff that had warm water, but the water visibility was only like 6 inches. So, I was flipping and when I got into areas that seemed like good spawning areas that had a nice hard bottom, I really slowed down in those areas. And you guys hear the planes. Rob's in his backyard right now. There's planes.
Well, we're all trying to piece this podcast together. Rob happens to be skydiving currently.
Yeah. Eventually.
So it sounds like a...
Eventually, we'll all be back together in the studio. It'll be a lot better. But thanks for hanging with us.
Coronavirus.
Anyway, yeah, it's clearly got us off our game, which wasn't to begin with.
Yeah, right.
But so I did that. I fished the dirty water for spawning fish and flipped. And what's crazy is a couple of the fish, I'd miss or lose a fish and be able to go back and get it later in the day. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Just knowing that they were spawning, there were a few that I missed two or three times and just kind of remembered where it was, marked it, and ended up putting in the boat at the end of the day. And then I wasn't so pissed at the end of the day, right? After you lose one. And he's lost and gone and you never catch him. It's one thing, but man, it's fulfilling when you lose one and you go back and catch his butt. It feels good.
Yeah. No kidding. It's like you scored one on him.
Exactly. Yeah. It's you lost a little time, but, man, it was a good feeling.
Describe that. It's my bad taste, but all I can think of is that's like Stevie Wonder bed fishing.
That's terrible.
Yeah,
I deserve to go down in flames. That's just where my mind.
You need all. You need karma on your side right now, Nick, and yeah, you are going in the wrong direction.
So Ott Defoe had a pretty crazy final day. Who ended up winning it? Right. I was trying to find the story on that. Do you know? Like it ended with some fireworks, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. I watched it. It was insane.
Did he just have like a moment there where he just went like blitzkrieg and caught a bunch, or what was it, Rob?
Yeah, he was fishing near a bridge. It looked like there was there water coming in and out of there, Josh? Do you know?
There was a massive spawning bay behind the bridge.
Okay, so it was just fish filtering in there.
I think so, I guess they were acting like post-spawn fish. So maybe they were pre- and post-spawn fish
coming and going,
chasing bait, you know, coming and going. It was a pinch point. You know, bridges are a pinch point during the spawn. You know, anytime you have a little bridge leading into a creek, you got fish coming from the main lake that are going back in there to spawn. So, yeah, that's what it is. That's what it was, just like you said.
And so, yeah, I turned live on with like an hour to go, and I want to say he was – I'm sure people know better than I do. I want to say he was 5 or 6 pounds out of the lead at that point, and he just started wrecking them. And it was one right – and the fish got bigger. It was incredible.
That was weird to see. Like, he started out with schoolers, like 2-pounders, and then all of a sudden he caught like a 9 and then several 5s after that.
Yeah, he was catching them on the surface with like a little wake bait, like a little – maybe a redfin. Is that what it was?
Something like that. One of those old school wake baits for sure.
Yeah, it was an old school wake bait. And then what else was he catching them on? The DT-10, that's when he started catching the big ones, and when he started throwing that DT-10, and he's got a new color coming out called Big Shad.
He might have got even more if it was a dredger, but that's cool.
Good point. I thought it was pretty cool how he started, he just changed techniques, and the size just was ridiculous, you know.
It's a good point. As soon as he started cranking, he caught the big ones.
Yep.
That's interesting. I was riding with Roy, riding home from the tournament, Roy Hawk. And we had all gone to pre-practice that lake, Athens, or practice it. We had 6 hours on our off day to go. And Roy's like, dude, we can't talk during the tournament. We can't share info, even during practice. But he goes, man, I hope someone finds this school of fish by this bridge. Because he goes, when I launched my boat, I looked over there and they were busting bait. And he goes, they busted bait for 30 minutes straight. And he sat there and caught him for 30 minutes straight, just having fun with him. 2 to 4 pounders. And he goes, dude, I hope and pray I make it to Athens, which he didn't, unfortunately. But so he doesn't make it, and we're driving home. I didn't know about any of this. And he's like, he starts telling me about this, and he's like, I hope someone finds those fish and everyone can see how amazing it is.
And sure enough.
What do you know, dude?
Dude, and that's a testament to just like at that level, guys are just that good. Right, like they get them. They dial it in and they get them.
everyone always finds the same stuff. And it's, I mean, hey, that was a pretty red flag, you know, bass chasing bait on the surface. It's not like it was anything like, you know, mysterious, but pretty funny how they had both found it. And honestly, if Roy would have made it, they would have both sat there and been first and second place, probably.
They would have been, yep, for sure. Hey, Josh, explain to me what your thoughts are on, like, Ott Defoe is at the top of his game, right?
He's crazy right now.
And think about, like, I don't even know the years, but, I mean, there was a period of time when, like, a Greg Hackney was on the top of his game. Not that he's not now, but he's still solid. But it's like guys go through periods of just brilliance.
They've got the fire.
I mean, how do you explain that?
That's a great point. And dude, like, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. And I'm curious to hear what your opinion is. I think, you know, the first thought is when your experience level gets to a certain point and you still have like the fire to be an absolutely red hot competitor. Like, seen it even with like Brett, you know, Brett Height when Brett hit that point, that stride in his mid 30s.
Yep.
Guys were like the mid 30s is when it happens. And that's the point that Ott's hit. He's like in his mid 30s. And now his experience level is he's got so much experience, but he still has so much fire and he's still physically fit and he can, I mean, there's nothing slowing him down. And, you know, he's got kids, he's got a family and that may or may not slow some people down on the fishing side, but I don't know. I think the mid 30s are like the age to hit that. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with everything. Everything comes to a peak, right? Your ability, your knowledge, your just everything, and you still have the desire to compete at a top level, you know. So, and it feels like, you know, once those guys, I don't want to say they taper off, but I think they just, I don't know, maybe it burns out a little bit, right? After a while,
that totally could be.
Yeah, you just can't stay on top forever, right? Like the next one up gets there, you know?
Yep. But I mean, I brought Hackney in there. He was just, that's just someone that I think of that's like that. I mean, there's a handful of guys that have just been absolutely on fire. Back in the day, it was Denny Brower.
Yep.
Like that guy just won everything for a period of time, you know? And there's there's probably, you know, 30 other names like that that you could come up with, you know?
Right. But right.
That's a good point.
Josh is the next one. So
yeah, I definitely haven't hit it yet. I hope not, dude.
That's... You're close. You're
He's
close.
He's not 30 yet. He's got time.
Right on. Well, hey, so just an FYI for everyone listening, Rob's got a really important call. He's got to run to in a little bit, so he's only got maybe 10 more minutes with us, and Nick and I are going to finish this thing off. So before we let you go, Rob, I want to talk about one thing I really wanted to get your thoughts on, man, and we talk all winter long. We talked about fishing after cold fronts, fishing, you know, with weird weather and stuff like that. And all that stuff's kind of come together and, you know, we're done with the major outrageous cold fronts, but we've had a lot of rain. We're getting a lot of snow melt and, the water's coming up super fast, pretty much no matter where you're fishing. And you've spent so much time at Roosevelt over the past 2 months where the water's been coming up steadily. If you are a guy that's going bass fishing kind of anywhere in the country right now and the water is on the rise and we're in the spawn, I don't know, man. How are you approaching fishing?
I don't know. We've talked about it a lot, and it's so weird how – I'll take Roosevelt, for example. Those fish just don't know what to do. So – and there's so much brush in that lake, it's hard to – I think a lot of the lakes in the Midwest that have a lot of water and stay at a steady height, and then all of a sudden they raise up 2 or 3 feet, those fish go to the first available cover, right? Here we have cover from, you know, 0 to 20 foot of water and thick cover, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we've just been approaching it with reaction baits and using spinner baits, chatter baits, stuff that you can just cover water with. And there's fish that are on the bank and there's fish that are in the tops of bushes out, you know, over, you know, 10 or 15 foot of water.
You don't even need it. So you're saying you don't necessarily need a bank right now, even in that situation. Yeah.
I would prefer a bank because it positions the fish better, meaning like a hard bank, you're saying?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. That's what I would prefer. But just covering water, definitely where it's a flatter area where there's just trees all the way to the bank, you know, 50 feet out.
definitely throw a spinnerbait through that stuff. But the other stuff, I mean, if I was going to flip, I would probably get on a harder bank where it's a little steeper.
That makes sense. If you're going to slow down, it needs to be like high percentage looking
stuff. It really
stuff.
Does. Yeah. It's not, I mean, I fished Bartlett the other day. That lake came up like, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 feet in overnight basically.
Jeez.
And we were looking at fish. There was fish on beds. We weren't catching them that way, but they were definitely on beds. And all of a sudden the lake comes up a bunch. Right. And those fish just kind of, I fished it after then. It felt like it dispersed them. We ended up catching them from the bank down to 20 foot of water the next trip there. So I don't know. I mean, it's a good time of year because these fish just want to get to the bank. So it definitely helps. The water temperatures are right. Everything, the moon was right for a while there. But I just don't think they want to spawn when the water's coming up like that. Do you think the fish that are spawning just stay there, Josh, or do you think it screws them up?
That's a super question, man. And you know, 5 feet is crazy, right? I think a bedfish, yep, if the water's coming up a foot a day, I think there's a good chance it'll be able to probably pull off what it's trying to do, maybe.
Right.
But yeah, if it's a 5 foot deal, it's your guess is as good as mine, man. I have no idea in a situation like that. I see what gets jacked up too is a lot of lakes in the central part of the country where they're not used to getting these massive, you know, lake comes up 20 foot in the spring or whatever like that.
You
get rain for 3 or 4 days and the water comes up 3 feet, which is a ton. And
a ton in those lakes, yep.
The fish will start to spawn. They open the floodgates to the dam because they don't want it to come up any further, and they're trying to control the water level. And then you're dealing with, you know, then you're dealing with all kinds of stuff, rising water, then falling water. And it's funny. It gets all jacked up during the spawn,
yep,
man. The fish want to be on,
yep,
the bank, so you got that going for you. But it makes it really tough.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you mentioned guessing where they're at. It's a big guessing game. It really is this time of year. And the only thing we have going for us is the fish definitely want to be on the bank. And that's what I keep – that's my mindset. It's like they want to be there, and they're moving up constantly. So that helps it a little bit, you know.
And you're throwing reaction. I mean, those are the main points,
yeah,
that we're getting across, I guess.
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, is, I mean, we always bring up Roosevelt, but Roosevelt's 5 feet from being full. And I can't wait to get up there after it's been full for a few days, because I think those fish are going to get there. Once it's full, they're going to set up, and it gets to a stable depth and the lake stabilizes a little bit. It's just going to go off. That's my prediction. So
I can't wait. I hope the lake is still open.
Right. Yeah, no kidding. But and at that point, I'm going to pick up a flipping stick, be more apt to pick up a flipping stick and break down areas where I think they're spawning, just like you did at Fork. You're fishing for spawning fish blind, but it's pretty fun when you can kind of call your shots just by looking. There should be a bed right there, right?
100%. And dude, you hit the nail on the head there. Like I started with a chatterbait. I started with a vibrating jig to find the fish, and you start off with your trolling motor on 70 when you're trying to find these areas that have them, when you have no idea where they're going to be, and you get a couple bites in an area. And before you know it, yeah, your trolling motor, your power poles are down, and you're making a flip every 6 inches, and you're crawling your bait because that's, you know that this is where one should be for sure.
Yep, yep.
And you always flip back. If you're fishing dirty water and you think you're not spawning fish and you catch one off a certain spot, you always flip back exactly where you caught that one fish, because whether you caught the male or the female, there's a legitimate chance the other fish from the bed is sitting there waiting to bite again. And that happened to me a couple times also.
Yeah, that's pretty cool when that happens, huh?
It's awesome. You know, you don't see it, but you know exactly what's going on, and you know exactly, yeah, what happened after you put him in the boat.
Hey, I hate to do this, guys, but what time is it right now? What do you got?
It's 5:50, dude. So you roll and
give me 5 more minutes. Let me know when 5 minutes are up. I don't have a clock on my phone here, and I'm no.
Yeah, clock, the dual FaceTime doesn't show the time, so Josh will catch you, man, because it's on, okay, his laptop.
Right on. We haven't heard enough of Nick, anyways, in this episode yet. He's got to be dying to do some talking.
It's just far too technical. I was gonna say, so when you use your slip float with your mill,
whatever, dude.
Whatever. Yeah.
No, so I was thinking, listening to that, and so another caveat when you're in dirty water, bed fishing in the spawn, I would imagine those fish are even more aggressive to hit it, right? I mean, because sometimes when you bed fish and you're sight fishing, you know, you have that element where maybe they can see you or they're more aware of you. At that point, has that been almost removed from the equation? I mean, do they just, they hit it when they're there?
A lot of times, dude, yeah, that might be the first thing that's been dropped on their bed yet. And right. They're not weary. And yeah, probably so. I mean, who knows? Again, who knows how many beds I did fish over that I didn't catch a fish on. But when you do, you make that flip to the base of a stump that looks like there's someone somewhere that was a bed, and it swims off instantly, and that fish bites it aggressively. It makes you think that they're pretty aggressive.
Did you mention, I might have been dazed out there, did you mention what bait you were flipping?
A Pit Boss, yep. So, and here's one thing. I've talked about it a lot on live, but and this is, again, totally just probably a mental thing for me, but and this is going to sound like a sales pitch like it always is when I'm talking about sponsor baits, but it's a cool bait, and it's a cool color. It's the Green Pumpkin Green Flake Pit Boss, and everyone fishes Green Pumpkin, everyone fishes Watermelon Candy, everyone fishes Black and Blue, but that Green Pumpkin Green Flake looks so good in the water that it sounds dumb, and I probably realistically don't know if that's making any more fish bite it, but it's just different. Like, everyone just fishes straight Green Pumpkin, and that Green Pumpkin Green Flake looks so good in the water, I highly recommend the listeners try it out.
Talk about your setup, the weight, the hook, the line, the rod and reel.
Yeah, I mean, just a basic flipping setup. 7.6 heavy action ABU rod, 20-pound test trilene fluorocarbon. And I had another buddy who's like a super good flipper here in Arizona text me and say, hey, why is everyone flipping fluorocarbon out there if the water's so dirty? And I've had this conversation with Rob before, Nick, but and he made the point of keeping the fish in the water. And this is like, I remember him saying this 5, 6, 7 years ago. And it's something I thought about. But what he meant by that was, when you set the hook on a fish and he's in a foot of water, if it's, say, for example, it's a 3-pounder, and you set the hook on a 3-pounder, you got to set the hook hard to get him coming up out of that tree and get the hook buried. If you're using braid, that fish may literally come up out of the water.
Rockets.
So you always hear about people saying, keep the fish down, keep them from jumping. Well, you literally just made the fish jump. You created that yourself. If you're using straight braid and there's no stretch and you set the hook super hard on a fish that's in a foot of water, you lift him out of the water, and then you're likely to get slack in your line. He shakes his head and he has a bigger chance of coming off. So that's one of the big reasons. Fluorocarbon keeps those fish in the water a little bit better because there's a little more stretch than braid. But another reason is, it's completely silent as it's like coming up over limbs and stuff like that, whereas the braid will zing a little bit. So I love braid for grass and stuff like that, or super deep trees. But if you're fishing shallow wood, fluorocarbon is the deal. And I think it showed by all the super great flippers that were out on the water this week. Jason Christie, guys like that, they all flip fluorocarbon.
Interesting. Yeah. And dude, that's something I'd never heard. Totally makes sense though. So fluorocarbon has very, very little stretch in and of itself, but compared to braid, it's still, you know, in a class of its own for stretch.
Yeah, you can feel the difference, right, Rob? I mean, don't you think?
Definitely. Yeah. What kind of weight were you using? How heavy?
I was flipping a 3/8. A lot of times I'll do 5/16, but, you know, 3/8, it's just easier to flip and easier to control. You know what I mean? I felt like if I can get away with a 3/8, I'm going to flip a 3/8 because I feel like I can flip it a little bit better. Are you the same way?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, back in the day, I used to use a lot, like a quarter ounce a lot.
I'm not good enough, dude, to be able to flip a quarter, apparently.
What's that?
I'm not good enough to be able to do that, dude.
Stop. You know, in a situation like that, I'd almost be apt to use 20-pound mono.
Interesting. For that same reason?
Just the little bit of forgiveness there and being around trees and all that stuff. But that's just my old school ass talking.
Well, that's cool, dude. I will try it fun fishing one time.
Right on. Hey, I think I need to cut out, guys. Yeah.
See you, dude. Thanks for popping in, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, guys. See you.
See you, brother. And now we'll see if we're technically savvy enough to lose 1/3 of our tripod here as he hangs up and not lose everything else.
That's if I can figure out how to hang up.
Yeah, Rob doesn't even know how to hang up. So for all of our listeners that are here to get technical tips and advice on electronics, you've come to the right place.
Yeah, it won't let me hang up, so you guys are going to have to probably cut me out somehow. But
oh, really?
Yeah.
Are you using your phone for what you need to do here, Rob?
Oh, there we go. I got it.
Peace, dude.
Unsavvy. I got it. Right on. Later.
All right. See you, man.
the guy who uses monofilament doesn't know how to hang up the phone. That seems about right. Now I can finally make fun of him because he's gone. You still there, Josh?
Yeah, I'm just messing with you, dude. I'm still here. That's funny.
Finally, this would just be my podcast, and it would be entertaining, insightful. This is what people have been waiting for.
Could you go an extra 20, 30 minutes by yourself?
Oh, easily. No, I don't.
There's a comedian that I love. His name's Bill Burr, and he's got a podcast where he just sits there and rants. Have you heard of Bill Burr?
Yeah, yeah.
He's great, dude. But he'll sit there and rant. It's by himself, and he just goes into his office, turns it on, and he just rants for 30, 45 minutes. And he's never had a guest, and he's hilarious. But I could never imagine being able to do that.
Dude, I guess that's what those, like, radio personalities do, right? Like, you look at, like, the Rush Limbaughs and stuff like that of the world. They just pick a topic, and they just go ham on it. I prefer the comedy route, though.
Yeah, he's way, way better than them, in my opinion. All right, well, so now that Rob's off here, dude, you had mentioned this book you're reading. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Cool, man. Yeah, since I, like a lot of people, right, we're living this new life of not having a lot of time to roam around. My brother put me up on this book called Chasing Rumor. And it's a book about this guy fly fishing, right? So more trout centric than a lot of the times we talk about bass. But so this guy is a fishing guide in Montana. And, you know, in the long winters of Montana, you start to daydream about the southern hemisphere because obviously their seasons are reversed. So summertime is our winter and winter is their summer. And so this dude packs up and heads down to Patagonia, which is like Chile and Argentina. And and the book, the premise of the book is just kind of like how you sit there when you're planning a trip or anything, you know, a fishing trip or like a big change of location, you get so excited, right? And you have all these visions of like the greatness. And Patagonia in the early 40s and 50s was this place where, like, you know, it was brand new. The fish were unpressured and they were catching like 20 and 30 pound trout. Like they were going out of
stock.
What
type of trout?
Yeah, mostly browns and rainbows. And so the backstory on Patagonia is that it actually got stocked. You know, trout aren't native species to that part of the world. So they were stocked in the early 1900s, dude. Fish eggs from America traveled on a boat to England and then made it to South America and bounced down in refrigerated carts.
Wow.
And got stocked.
That's incredible that they pulled that off, dude. That even, they even tried and thought of that.
How did they live, right? So that all happened in the early 1900s. And then Argentina went into, you know, Patagonia went into this crazy depression. So like instantly overnight, it all just shut off. So these fish were left unbothered, unmolested for 30 or 40 years before anyone went back there to see, you know, how the experiment fared. Well, it turned out that these fish just, you know, did wonderful. They grew and they, you know, adapted to the environment and took it over. And so you had these huge trophy trout, but as the decades went on and more pressure now, you know, it's still a great fishery, but it's much more challenging. It's not like it was back then where you could just catch 20 and 30 pounders, like they're going out of style. So fast forward to where this book, you know, the idea of the book is called Chasing Rumors. This guy does a bunch of research. He moves down there and has to try and figure it out because the days are gone where you could just pick any river and know you're going to catch giants. And it's kind of has my mind thinking about just some of the other places, you know, what are some of the legendary bass fishing lakes, dude? I mean, probably like Lake Okeechobee comes to mind. What are there any other spots like that you think of that are just like the classic original, you know, bass fisheries?
There are, and you hear stories about them. And I mean, dude, before we go into that, that sounds like a killer book, dude. Are you done with it?
Pretty close. Sadly, you know, when you're almost done with a good book or like a good movie or something, you feel like you're losing a friend because you've had such a like
so you're
enjoyable
milking it.
Time. Dude, I'm milking it. I'm only reading like a couple pages a day.
Oh, hey, that's cool. Yeah, that's a good idea, actually.
Yeah. So my bad. I was getting a little bit ahead of myself. So the guy gets down there, right, and he has his struggles. He has a steep learning curve. Trying, you know, he doesn't speak Spanish hardly at all. And he's trying to figure out where to go and how to catch them. And, you know, he has some successes, but probably, you know, like some humble people are, they don't gloat on those as much as they talk about the times they look really stupid. you know, and the mistakes they make. And yeah, it's a great book. I would recommend it if anyone's looking to fill some time at home over the next couple weeks or months. That's a great one. It's called Chasing Rumor by Cameron. I wish I had it in front of me, but if you Google that, you'll see it.
That's cool. I'm all over it, dude. I'll sit down and read it. Hopefully they've got it on Audible, but I'll sit down and read it. I probably have the time right now.
I imagine they do. So.
Yeah, that's cool. But yeah, as far as on the bass side, man, that brings up an interesting point because it's all you hear are rumors, but you see photos, man, and you see these skin mounts from some of the old school bass fishermen that have been doing it, you know, our dads and our grandpas and our great grandpas. And dude, I don't think there's any shadow of a doubt that the fish populations and fish size were bigger probably in all of our lakes for all species back in the day, outside of certain circumstances, which we'll talk about here. But you even hear about like lakes like in the Ozarks, like a Bull Shoals or a Table Rock Lake and stuff like that. When they first impounded these reservoirs, man, dude, it sounds like 5, 6, 7, 8 pounders were like extremely common. And now if you caught an 8 pounder on Bull Shoals, dude, you caught a once in a decade fish. If you fish out there for 10 years, you will catch one 8 pounder in 10 years. And it sounds like that was like an everyday occurrence back, you know, if you go back 40, 50 years.
And so what was cool in this one, you know, so the author does a great job of giving you the history. And I kind of touched on that with like how the fish eggs came from the United States through England down to Argentina, bouncing in a little cart, dude.
That's crazy.
But so then they sat there for 30 plus years untouched, right? And so then just by happenstance, a couple of dudes from, I believe they were from Argentina, were in New York City, and they were just cruising around, and they walked into this legendary fly fisherman's shop in New York City, of all places, and they got to talking like anglers do, right? You know, instantly you spark up some common threads, and before long, the guy in New York City is one of the original OG legendary fly fishermen. They make plans for him to fly down to Argentina and see what's up. And so this was the legendary trip. And he was also an editor for, I think it was Field and Stream, one of those early magazines. And dude, he just proceeds to whack them, kind of like the Bull Shoals thing, where like, dude, he introduces these two locals to fly fishing, and they called it the shaving cream fly. You know, back in the day when like they would shave, they had those long brushes that were a couple inches long, and that's how you lather shaving cream on.
Oh, I
had
sure. To Google. Yep.
So it's, you know, he's tying these huge like 3 and 4 inch long streamers, and the locals are looking at him like, dude, what are you doing? Like, that's ridiculous. And dude, he just proceeds to just catch them. Like those trout were so big and so dumb, you know, unpressured. God. That they knew what they were doing. So there's all these natural lakes there. They're all glacial fed natural lakes, and then rivers in between them. So they were fishing the mouths of the river, right? Because if you're a big trout, you're smart. You know, you just wait for the current to wash everything over your head. So this guy goes and he just has this legendary trip, takes tons of pictures of it, right? And then publishes them in the magazine. The author does a good job of walking you through that history. But then it was on the map, right? So then like those pictures of skin-mounted bass and stuff, the next thing you know, dude, lodges started sprouting up down there, and conservation just wasn't understood back
then. Oh, no, dude.
Dude, so like you said, people were just taking for granted, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10 pounders, and, you know, everything was kept and killed and skin-mounted or whatever, and, you know, you don't know at that time. And I think that's led to the place where we are today, where
What's
we
it
understand.
Like now over there, man, is it still decent, or is it like
there's
not
still
like it was?
So there's still, it's still considered like the trophy trout fishery in the world, among other places, and you can still go there and catch fish over 10 pounds, but it's just different. You earn them, right? You know what I mean? Like you don't just book a flight, you know, book a trip down there and expect it. Like you got to have a little bit of luck on your side, it seems like. And one cool thing there too is that farther south, down where the rivers enter the whatever ocean that would be, I'm assuming it's probably, I don't even know, I want to say Atlantic, but I could be totally wrong on that. But they've become sea run, so they're kind of like the steelhead salmon
really?
Of Northwest. So these brown trout live their lives in the ocean and then run up the rivers to spawn. And dude, like those fish are still giant. I mean, 20 and 30 pounders exist. And I don't know. It's just cool, man. It's like, I've fantasized a few times in my life about having a time machine and how cool it would be back in time. Like any breed of fishing would just be so sick to go back in like the 40s and 50s with like modern technology, right? Like with the stuff we have, gear, equipment wise, it'd be insane.
You'd feel guilty. It wouldn't even be right, dude. You would feel, yeah. I would think like you'd be catching me like, this just isn't right. Like this
yeah,
is
it's too
just too easy. Yeah. I mean, yeah. The huge props to the guys that were the trailblazers to figure out the techniques with the tackle and gear that they had, no matter what they were fishing for. But yeah, it's a, you know, there was so little as far as technology compared to what we've got now. And I even look back 12, 15 years that I've been fishing seriously. You know, I've been fishing for bass pretty seriously for 17 or 18 years. And I look back to the early days and I've seen some huge shifts on lakes that I know like really well. There are baits that the fish just completely ignore now that used to, they would go nuts for. And we've talked about that before with certain baits, but like even just like fish behaviors that you don't see anymore. Like I used to see on some of our Western lakes, I used to see largemouth acting like stripers and boiling on bait on all of our lakes with regularity. And it's so rare now to see that.
Yeah.
It's like, they're already like I've seen them evolve a little bit, and I don't know why they don't do that so much anymore, but it's just different now.
Do you think they like, you know, in that specific example, because I've wondered that too, maybe they there's just more vulnerability there for them, like they just recognize that or something?
Maybe.
I wonder.
Yeah, I have no idea why that is, but like yeah, they would just expose themselves, and we saw it happen with Ott last week on that lake, and it's like, man, when
those are like unicorn experiences.
Yeah, it doesn't happen anymore. You know, here's one crazy thing from Fork, and I'm not going to go too far into this out of respect for the guy who caught the fish. But I know a guy who caught a 16 pounder at Fork last week and found out about this after the tournament, a 16 pounder, dude.
What?
And,
dude, that
to just Matt, just to know that someone caught a 16 pound bass in a public lake that gets that much pressure right now, that is like such a rare occurrence. Like I personally don't know anyone that's caught anything over 13 in probably the last, I don't know, dude, 10 years for sure.
You're talking nationwide.
Yeah. I mean, to catch a 16 pound bass in a lake that gets hammered that much is incredible. And I was like, dude, that's a, yeah, if you look at the numbers and you maybe take out the San Diego lakes where it was all going down 10, 20 years ago, that is a top, maybe top 50 fish catch on of all time from anyone anywhere on public waterways in the last 50 years, don't you think?
100%, dude. And it almost, I guess, becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Like the technology has advanced so far, but it's almost out of necessity because the pressure has intensified so much. And that just all adds up into, you know, fewer fish and smaller fish, I think, right? Like you just, you know, when they, back in the day before we had just mastered the art of catching fish to the extent we have, I think there was just, you know, waterways were full of big, happy, dumb fish. And now, you know, the pressure and that has altered it. So, dude, what a fish of a lifetime, man. A 16-pound bass nowadays is like, dude, like you said, public lake. Sick.
Unreal. There's no photo of it. There's nothing. And up to, in his mind, it's a fish store, and he wants to keep it that way because he doesn't want to have to deal with everything going around it. But it happened, and it's an incredible story.
That's refreshing, right? Because, you know, that there'd be plenty of people that would be, you know, social media to the max.
I would have tried to turn that into dollar bills. I'm not going to lie at all, dude. I would have tried to monetize that thing. So
hashtag
No doubt. Where was I going? Oh, yeah. So a couple instances where I think the good old days are happening now, and there's been some articles about this and stuff, but kind of interesting in just the bass world. If you go up north to the smallmouth lakes up around the Great Lakes and some stuff in Canada, places where gobies have been introduced,
okay,
in 50 years, they're going to be talking about now, like we're talking about these largemouth lakes down south 50 years ago. It is unbelievable what's going on these smallmouth lakes that have the gobies where guys are catching 6 to 8 pound smallmouth. That wasn't happening 30 years ago or even 15 years ago. And who knows, it might not be happening in 30 years from now.
What a cool thought, dude. I hadn't thought of that. But and so you attribute that to obviously the ecosystem gets a new, what did gobies get introduced by accident or was that on purpose?
I should have done some research on that one, dude. I don't know. I just, I know they haven't been around forever. If you look at some of the really famous waterways like Lake Erie or Lake Ontario or the St. Lawrence River, it used to take 15 pounds to win a tournament, and it's not because they weren't good fishermen. It's because those fish didn't exist. You know, they just weren't that big, and the gobies come in there, and the fish absolutely go nuts on them, and it totally changes the whole landscape of the fishery. So that's one scenario where, like, we're in that time right now, which is kind of cool to think about, and people need to try to protect it and preserve it as much as possible, which, you know, I think for the most part is happening. And
dude, that's actually a really refreshing thought, because now we do know so much more about conservation, right? Like, we understand why you don't just go out for 2 years and catch all the 6 to 8 pounders and throw them on a stringer, right?
Good point. Good point. And, dude, I mean, some of those lakes are so big. Like, I've been on some reefs on Lake Ontario, for example, where you catch a fish and you're like, I'm probably the only guy that's ever caught this fish. And it's, you know, the fish is 7, 8, 9 years old, probably. It's that big and old, and it's, and you know, like, the season's so short, this lake is so big, these fish
don't
get touched.
Maybe it's protected then, you know, because back then that book kind of touches on conservation issues down there and why that has been, you know, contributed to the downfall of it being so spectacular. It's just that, dude. Sometimes I think people get a little carried away and think, oh, you know, it's not really adding up to anything if I keep all these fish. And, you know,
no
day
doubt.
In and day out, year after year, absolutely it does. And that's cool, man. I think that fishery has a good chance because we just know so much more now about, you know, why you don't do that. And we can get cool replicas made. That's cool, man. I'm glad you had kind of saved that to tell me that on the podcast. It's exciting. It makes you want to, like, seek out those places even more. And know that with the introduction of other species and other bodies of water, you know, it could be amazing.
Yeah, it's blown up now, though, bro, because, like, with it, what do we get, 5 million downloads per episode? That's going to be at least 4 or 5 million people going up there and fishing next
Dude,
summer.
It's over now, right? It's a good thing we went up there 2 weeks ago and got one last hurrah.
Yeah, through the ice.
Through the ice.
Oh, man. Well, that's cool, dude. Props for bringing that book up. I definitely want to read it. And one last thing before we wrap this this episode up. Do you have your phone with you?
Yeah.
As always, I'm unprepared. But, dude, we've got a listener shout-out that we've got to do. Can you go over to our Instagram page and check out my post from today? Nick
yeah,
and I so both do some of the content on this page. But so the Anglers Happy Hour Instagram page, do you see it?
Yeah, I do, man.
We've got Gunnar Stanton. Gunnar is an Arizonan. This picture is from several years ago. He's either in college or graduated from college now, and he's a stud fisherman. He fishes a lot of tournaments with my buddy Justin Kerr, and just fishes a bunch of college events, and great fisherman. But how old do you think is this picture, dude? Maybe 15?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, right in that preteen or just becoming a teenager phase.
And he wants to get roasted, dude. So what do we have for him?
Well, you know, first off, we got to call the fashion police because I see stripes with black. And, you know, that's never going to be. And it's a V-neck striped shirt, too.
I saw the V-neck.
I like the confidence rocking the V-neck, dude. He just needs a couple of sprigs of hair popping out of that, and it'd be a winner.
It's coming. It's coming for sure.
Yeah, you're right. Needs to be watered a little bit more, and then those sprouts will take shape. I like the hair, dude. I think he and I were going to the same hairdresser for the cereal bowl, or Rob called it the soup bowl. So I think that was a bowl of Campbell's tomato soup, and trimmed accordingly.
That's funny. Yeah, it's too bad Rob missed out on this one. He would have definitely called out the bowl cut. But yeah, good job, dude. That's awesome. And so Nick's gonna address the fashion. I'm looking at that fish, and that looks like a. There's no doubt that is a northern fish. Now, I don't know if it came from, like, way up, I say northern, I guess. It's a shallow grass fish, right? I mean, the color of that thing is so black. It looks like it maybe came out of, like, a northern Arizona pond or something like that. And it's a tank. It's a big fish.
Dude, if you close your eyes and just envision what a largemouth bass looks like, it's that fish, dude. It's that fish is fat in the right places, got a big old head on it, great coloring. That's a hell of a fish, man. I who wouldn't want to catch a handful of those?
Yeah, that's that fish is the king of whatever pond he caught it in. And
yeah.
Pretty cool, dude. So thanks for sending it in. If you guys want to follow him, it's Gunner Stanton, all lowercase, and we've got him tagged in this photo. So check it out and send
us. Hopefully he gutted that thing properly and ate that and then mounted it in respect to what we've been talking about, right?
Yeah, cut the sides off of it, dude.
After talking about how pretty of a fish it is, hopefully it died.
I'm sure. And he's kidding, of course, and I'm sure he did.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, for sure. Dude, and for some upcoming, you know, you had mentioned ideas for how we can get some engagement from all of our three fans. I think a fun one would be, and we'll get Rob back in on this. We haven't even talked to him about this. This is just off the top of my head. I think it'd be really fun to talk about either like we have touched on when we were younger fishing, or maybe just like getting our kids fishing. And maybe some of the listeners can start sharing some pictures of their favorite pictures with like their smaller kids or, you know, teenagers or whatever.
And stories.
And stories, right? Because our last episode kind of kicked off totally unintentionally with that picture on my desktop. Rob pointed out with my son mid meltdown holding a good fish. It'd be fun, dude. Maybe you can grab a couple of pics if you have any, and I will. And I know Rob's got that one of Boyd holding a bass bigger than I've ever caught, and he's like 3 years old with a life jacket on, and Boyd caught it himself. So that could be a for all of our listeners out there. Post it up to us, show us some of your pictures of family fishing trips, and we'll work it into a future episode.
That's a good idea. We'll put it all together, and that'd be great. I'm hoping to get my kids out this week, you know, if the lakes are still open. We've got nothing to do, and the lake's a pretty safe place to be right now, so hopefully we'll have some good, not too crazy stories, but just fun stories from fishing.
Hopefully no one jumps off the boat like my son did 2 seconds into that fishing trip. I know we told that story, so hopefully that doesn't happen to you.
No doubt. But yeah, send those in, guys. If you've got just, again, anything, I mean, we're wide open. We can always come up with stuff, but if you've got stuff that you want to hear, if you've got crazy stories and experiences you want us to share, that'll maybe give us some other ideas on other stuff or just something you want to hear us talk about it, send us in, send us a message on Facebook or Instagram, drop it into the review section on iTunes, and we'll try to get to it. And again, hopefully, you know, not for our sake, but just for everyone's sake, hopefully things clear out here, in some time, but I think, you know, our next couple episodes will probably be coming to you remotely like this. And then, hopefully we get back together and get back into our groove, but we will be coming to you every week, every Sunday night or Monday morning. And, I know you may not be commuting to work, but hopefully you can hear this while you're sitting in the garage, working on tackle, sitting in your house, or maybe even driving to the lake.
Hey, and you know, Josh, you're doing a great job wrapping this. I did want to say one more thing. We had a really awesome review on iTunes, and I'm trying to find it because I wanted to just say a thank you to that guy. And unfortunately, I can't find our guy or gal, but they had just mentioned that they – did you read it, dude? I think they're from the Midwest.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, and they were thinking that it wasn't going to be applicable, and they gave us a lot of – really, really nice things to say. So I think selfishly, I just want to say thank you to them because it just feels good, man. Like, it's cool. We spawned this idea, no pun intended, just as buddies sitting around wanting to talk fishing and figuring we could maybe connect with some other people that have the same interest in it. And to see that happening, it's crazy, man.
It's a good feeling, and it's very humbling, man. It's super cool to hear those words. And thanks to, you know, that guy and everyone else that's left us a review. And again,
yeah, everyone else too. Yes.
That going back selfishly, like, I have no idea how these, how everything works on iTunes and stuff like that. But I know the more reviews and ratings we get, the higher up we are in the searches and stuff like that. And it makes us easier to continue doing this. So we're not stopping anytime soon, but again, yeah, thanks so much for those. And, they go a long way for us. It beats our egos a little bit. And we like that big time.
And we have very fragile egos, so the more people can pump into them, the better we are.
No bad reviews, no matter what. I'm still waiting for that one bad review that's going to give me nightmares.
We had one early on, and they got dealt with. We hired some Haitians and took care of it.
Right. Well, hey, dude, thanks for making the time, and we'll get Rob for the full episode next time. He was going to be on the whole time here, but again, as always, we had some technical difficulties, and we only got 30 minutes of Rob, so we'll get him longer next time, and dude, I'll talk to you here this week.
All right, brother. Peace.
All right. See you, man. Thank you, guys. Hey guys, thanks again for listening to the podcast. We'll be stoked when we can all get back together in the cave, but in the meantime, we'll do everything we can to bring you the best possible shows remotely. I know when I'm listening to a podcast, bad audio drives me nuts, so we're doing our best to get the sound quality better on every remote episode we do. Hopefully next week we'll sound close to, you know, in-studio quality, and again, thanks again for hanging out with us, and we'll chat with you next week. Have a good one, guys.